Welcome to another Saving Throw interview. I'm Scott, and with me today is Russell Bailey of White Wolf. How you doing? Feel free to say a few words about yourself.
Hello, my name's Russell Bailey. I'm the Vampire the Requiem developer at White Wolf Publishing. I work also on EVE Online and on World of Darkness Massively Multiplayer.
Get things off. How'd you get into the gaming hobby?
My uncle was a big D&D guy, probably close to an original D&D guy when he got into it in the 70s, guess around 75 or 76. And so gaming was sort of always there in you know, my family social circle. I got into gaming, actually, I don't know the year, but I got into gaming with basic D&D, more or less, and then ran across Vampire the Masquerade in a comic book store, and that sort of set, I don't know, the time for the rest of my life at this point. I mean, right now I've been working on Vampire for 5 years, so, and I've been a fan of Vampire since, I don't quite know the year, but probably 92. So it's been most of my life.
Alright, how did you actually get into getting paid for gaming?
I post prolifically on the internet. And I was writing stuff about the games I was running, and I was posting session write-ups, and Justin Kelly saw someone post, and he thought it was cool. I talked to him a little bit, and he encouraged me to talk to Will Hindmarch, who was a vampire developer at the time, and put in a good word for me with Will. And so then I got my first freelance gig on World of Darkness Urban Legends back in 2005.
All right, and since then you've gone on to do a lot of other World of Darkness products, but what would you say your favorite projects you've worked on are?
Damnation City, which was not the second book I worked on, but was the second book that I worked on in release order. Damnation City is one of my favorites. Will Hindmarch's developing work. It's a comprehensive guide to building or reinterpreting a city for vampires. I think it's one of the most useful vampire supplements that we or anybody else has ever gotten. It's because the city is the core iconic environment for the vampire game, Masquerade, Requiem, whatever. And these dystopic urban landscapes have always been at the heart of vampire. So it's something in a way, a book about city building is something that vampire always needed, but the fact that did it after there was 16 years of institutional experience fine-tuning vampire made it a really excellent book. It was quite hard to work on because it was a very large book, and because of production realities, we had to do it in a very short turnaround. 50,000 of the words that I wrote were written in 2 weeks. So it was quite a big project, but I'm extremely proud of that. Other things I've liked, Kiss of the Succubus, the David Clan book, was both the first, the largest project I've done to date for White Wolf, right after I came on board full time. And I wrote 80,000 words for that, and I also co-developed it. So, and that was a chance to really dig into a lot of the interpersonal issues involved in vampires' relationships, and to take, you know, you get a lot of, oh, David, Toreador, they're the sexy ones, blah, blah, and people sort of dismiss the clans because of that. What I thought was really fun about Kiss of the Succubus was instead of doing, like, we've done a couple of times in the past. It's just like, oh yeah, no, they're not really just, they're not really the sexy ones. There's this whole secret political undertone, and everything you knew is wrong. Except, no, everything you know is right, but it's way scarier than you thought it was. So I really enjoyed working on that project.
Any particular favorite projects that don't have your name on them? Any books that you just like to go back to for inspiration or even just for fun?
That's a longer list, but I think my favorite, I'll step out of the vampire line for a second here, because I could go on forever about vampire books that I love. But Demon the Fallen is really my favorite White Wolf horror book. It's not bad. It's beautiful, it's majestic, it's sad, and it's also at the same time gritty and badass. It's a great book. I enjoyed reading it. It was actually just reading it a few weeks ago, so it's not so fine. But also it was, it provided, several excellent, chronicles for Michael. We ran some great games.
On your website, you list your you credit yourself differently on different projects. What would you quantify as the difference between being a designer and a writer?
That is a really, it's a matter of how so when I'm a writer, my main job is producing text, the actual chapter text that you see on the page. And I've done quite a lot of writing for White Wolf, and
right, I think this is why
writer is what you think of when you say as a designer, or as my actual business card says, developer, I'm outlining. I'm saying, okay, so you've got 2,000 words on this subject, and here are the things that I'd like to see in there. Address topics 1, 2, and 3. Here are the core rules for a certain system. Please develop those out to, about 10,000 words. Developing also, you can have a different role in terms of playtesting as a developer, because you're doing the playtesting after things come in rather than as they're being written, which is what you're doing in writing. It's a fuzzy line, especially with some of the specific projects I've worked on. As I mentioned, I developed Kiss of the Succubus along with Joseph Carragher, but I also wrote most of it. So the core ideas and the outline and all that were my work. But the actual writing I shared with Benjamin Bow, who's a fantastic writer that we do a lot of work with. It's slightly difficult.
Do you feel that there's any sort of different sets of challenges between the two jobs? Do you find one more easy?
I wouldn't say one's easier per se, but there's a lot of there are a lot of functional differences. When you're a writer, you are very concerned with details. I mean, you're working literally on a sentence-to-sentence basis. When you're developing, you're more concerned with the overall structure of the book, the overall effect of the book, how a reader's going to move through the book as a whole, rather than how they're going to move through an individual chapter. You're considering what happens, if they read this out of order, do we want to make it easy to flip to any chapter, or is this the kind of book we're going to recommend you read at beginning to end before you use it? About how long should each section be so that people can get the most knowledge out of it, the most use out of it. In some books, the clan books are composed of relatively long pieces. A lot of other books are big sections of shorter chunks. So you've got a lot more emphasis on structure and on overall theme. Also, when you're developing, you're usually coordinating a large number of authors. Between 2 and 6 authors who are writing the actual text. So you've got to make sure that the work of multiple people flows together and that's useful. So it's very different from writing in that sense. Really, it's a matter of what level of zoom you're looking at the book from. I wouldn't say. And of course, the other thing when you're developing is that anything that goes wrong, you have to catch the faults and cracks. With writing, you're usually have like one big block of work. Like for a given book, you usually spend about a week on it, depending on how long it is, of course. But you know, I'll have a solid week of work. Development, because things come in at different times, and because things fall through, or things need to be rejiggered, it ends up being a thing where you're developing several projects at once, and you come back to each one every couple of days. It's entirely different.
Are there any projects that you'd wish you'd gotten to work on?
One that comes easiest to mind right now is I wish I'd gotten to work on the supplement for Geist, Book of the Dead. I didn't have time because of EVE Online commitments at the time. And I also didn't get to do any work on World of Darkness Inferno, which I'd been extremely keen to work on, it, but Vampire was too demanding at the time, so I was hoping to do some writing on it, but didn't get to. Great though. Chuck Wendig doing the section that I knocked out the fucking cross. The section on possessed characters. I've gotten a lot of use out of that book too. It's kind of cool, actually, being around when things are developing and being able to use them yourself later. You get a slightly different perspective than when you're just buying books off the shelf, but it's just as much fun.
And are there any ideas that are sort of kicking around the office right now that have got you excited to work on?
Yes, actually. We were doing... I just came out before I came to my desk to do this interview. I just came out of a backstory meeting for a future product, and there's some really, really exciting stuff in that. I don't think I'm saying about it, but we got some Godfather betrayal and family relationships and stuff like that, which is really juicy, and I'm looking forward to digging into that in more detail as we work on developing that. Of course, my company has to talk about the project for you.
Alright, so moving on to that, so tell me about Shards.
I believe the official title that for these is going to be Mirrors Sci-Fi Shards. It's two separate products. World of Darkness Bleeding Edge, which covers cyberpunk, and World of Darkness The Infinite Macabre, which covers space opera. And these are two very different sci-fi toolkits for the World of Darkness. If you've seen Mirrors, it's a similar approach, similar format, but since these are standalone products separate from Mirrors, we did change a few things around to suit the individual books that we're doing. Do you have any more specific questions about
this? Is going to be, how compatible is this going to be with the rest of the World of Darkness material? Because if I want to play a child soldier in ancient Rome who is also a vampire, I can pick up Innocence, Dogs of War, Requiem in Rome, and Requiem, and run that crazy idea that I don't know why I would run. But if I want to, say, play a cyberpunk hunter, could I do that?
Oh, absolutely. The, let's see, I'm thinking of a good example. The cyberpunk material in Bleeding Edge mainly focuses on modifying the mortal experience a little bit. So although we have material for supernaturals in there, the mechanical focus is on providing new options for mortals that shade things in a cyberpunk fashion. There are two new types of merits called origins and roles, which connect characters to a cyberpunk background. You can import those into any World of Darkness game. They don't connect up to templates or anything like that. They're completely parallel to those kinds of systems. You want the cyberpunk child soldier in Ancient Realm? I can make you a hacker from the suburbs, who's a child with your innocence there, and use the skill list from Requiem for Rome, and apply the vampire template, no problem. And you can even throw in some cybernetic plugins on top of that.
Have you had to do any altering to the core mechanics for cyberpunk or space opera type gaming?
Well, it depends on what you call the core mechanics. The basic map is all identical. Cyberpunk stuff does have its own separate replacement track for morality, which we call alienation, which actually measures not so much your sanity or your moral condition or anything like that, but actually your ability to relate to the culture around you.
And so cybernetics eat your soul?
Oh, cybernetics don't eat your soul.
Okay.
Going back to the literature, the easy example here is William Gibson's Neuromancer. It's a story about people at varying levels of separation from society and community. And so what we've done is we've repurposed the mechanics that we generally use for humanity to measure that kind of thing. Another major mechanic that you're going to see in Bleeding Edge is loyalty, which is a mechanic that allows characters to get bonus effects both for being trustworthy and supporting each other, and for betraying each other.
So, getting into space opera, that's sort of a very nebulous genre, it seems. Everyone has their own idea of what that is. So what does that mean to World of Darkness, in this case?
Well, so Chuck Wendig wrote that section. Chuck is one of our most prolific writers. He's worked with us as far back as the original Hunter the Reckoning. He developed Hunter the Vigil. He's done volumes and volumes, literally, of vampire work. And his summary of space opera is that it's often a combination of fantasy and science fiction. So in the World of Darkness, that becomes we're sort of taking science fiction, hybridizing it with dark fantasy and horror. Not really hard sci-fi. Neither of these supplements is particularly hard sci-fi, but Bleeding Edge leans towards the fairly plausible near future, whereas Infinite Macabre is more out there in technology indistinguishable from magic, and sometimes even gonzo horror kind of stuff. It tends to be romantic, primarily small R romantic, but also sometimes big R Harlequin romantic. Operatic, epic, political, even astro-political, I think is the term I'm referring to a little bit in here. So the biggest thing about space opera, as opposed to cyberpunk in this context, is that the scope is much wider. So geographically, politically, much broader scope. Whereas the cyberpunk stuff is closer to the usual World of Darkness, man on the street kind of setting. The World of Darkness tends to be a very local level sort of game, and the Infinite Macabre takes that and retunes it for epic galaxy span sort of horror and adventure. It's sort of, if you're familiar with the tiers from Hunter, the Vigil, and Geist, the Sin Eaters, and when the Danse Macabre comes out from Vampire the Requiem, the space opera is almost a fourth tier.
All right.
Above conspiracy
line. Now I'm just sort of got my gears turning about what I do with sort of a World of Darkness space opera game. How do you think this will end up running for most people?
Well, I'm actually not entirely sure what the question is.
Well, like, at the table, how would this play out? Like, what sort of storyteller resources are we going to see for running space operatic horror?
There's a pretty wide range of stuff in the product itself. I believe what Chuck ran was sort of how do you describe it? Heinlein's Starship Troopers meets Doom.
Okay.
Kind of a military sci-fi thing was what he ran. I played around with it a little bit. I did something kind of in the vein of Blake 7. With a group of political outlaws in a against sort of a strange World of Darkness meets Farscape kind of backdrop. We have a lot of different options. There's sort of a core set of mechanics and then a large number of tweaks and setting options that you can apply.
This is one question that's sort of a personal interest, and I think there's a few people trying to ferret this out, is that, I don't know if you know, but someone has the license to Star Wars RPGs again.
Yeah.
So with you developing space opera, is that a clue? Is that a hint?
No. All right. White Wolf is not developing the Star Wars RPGs.
All right. I will go on to Pester Fantasy Flight next week, then. But getting back to this, will we be seeing any other sci-fi type mirrors or even into other genres?
Well, we've got some ideas for other sci-fi material, but I don't have anything in active development right now, neither does Eddie, who's the other person who worked in-house on this project. Eddie developed this. I did writing and some ad hoc development on it. So you might see more, actually, but we don't have anything on the plate there. You will see a fairly exciting new genre product this year for Mage. We're going to have Mage Noir, which brings Mage into a sort of the rain-soaked 1940s post-war era. And that's going to cover your detective fiction, your crime fiction. There's a lot of going to be a lot of Raymond Chandler and Richard Stark kind of stuff. And I've seen the early stuff. It sort of branched out from something that we did in the Mage Chroniclers guide. We had a section on the Noir Chronicles by Bethany Culp, I believe, and we just thought that was tremendously cool and exciting. And so we decided that it deserved its own book. And that's in the writing stage right now.
All right, cool. Now, crossing streams a bit into the MMO, could you just sort of talk about your different challenges being doing content for an MMO versus doing content for tabletops?
Well, when I came on board at White Wolf, one of my main jobs was to bridge what we called at the time White Wolf IPDD, that is White Wolf Intellectual Property Design and Development. I don't remember what we called it at the time, but with the EVIP development process. And so my initial job actually was to bridge the tabletop development world and the MMO development world to benefit EVE Online. And so we went through a lot of refining the communication within the company. The way things sort of work with White Wolf as a part of CCP is that CCP is a company that has, a million teams working on a million things. And White Wolf is a set of teams. We're not so much a department. We're definitely not a subsidiary. We're an integrated part of the whole thing. We're a set of teams that works on these these tabletop role-playing game things, and also on a wide variety of other things for the company. So, like I said, when I came on board in 2007, I was focused on bringing the expertise that White Wolf had, both in terms of practical experience, hiring freelance writers, working with outside writers, publishing physical books, bringing that to the EVE process, and also with bringing, quite simply, White Wolf talent, and so that the EVE world building and the EVE plot development process could take advantage of that. So I worked on that kind of thing for a while, and then I moved into EVE content directly, working on EVE mission content and plot content for expansions like Apocrypha. And the real difference there is that when I'm working on a World of Darkness book, I'm working for a product, for a player, or for a storyteller. Something that you take and, you know, it goes through, you pick out parts of it and you put it in your own game. When I'm working on massively multiplayer game content, as we believe, it's more like being a storyteller. Obviously, the tools and I can't be at your table running EVE Online for you, but you're thinking more like a storyteller than like a storyteller's assistant, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think I've got that.
The other thing is that the audience of backstory material that you produce is very different, because you're creating a lot more internal reference material. For example, EVE Online again. In EVE, we have the missions that you encounter in game. We have things like star system descriptions, although we don't have that many of them right now. We are expanding those. We have item descriptions. We have short stories on the website. We have the novels. So there's a need to maintain an internal body of lore that's somewhat separate from any of the individual products we create. Whereas the World of Darkness role-playing games, or Exalted, or whatever, you tend to be creating world books primarily for an external audience. So the demands of what kind of writing you're doing and how you put it together and how you communicate it are very different. Ultimately, though, working on massively multiplayer games and working on tabletop games, we have essentially the same driving ethos. What we do at CCP is we create the best tools that we can to help people tell their stories. And so that sort of underlies all the different things that we do.
So could you just sort of walk us through a day in the life of MMO content design?
Let's see, can I? It's not that different from the tabletop development. I come in the morning, I have a status meeting with my team. We go through the day's tasks. We do daily meetings for everything at CDCP, and usually spend the morning doing meetings, brainstorming, stuff like that, and then spend the afternoon doing implementation or testing. With EVE, we often have to get a pretty large group of people together to test content, especially. I didn't work directly on this, but we had to do some very large play tests for the Incursion expansion that we just launched. And so coordinating that, you know, that's a full afternoon activity. The way game design in general works this way, but MMO content design particularly works with something like EVE, is that it's iterative. We come up with an idea, we put it in space, we play with it for a while, we say, okay, this works, this doesn't work, then we come back, we tweak it, and then we fly out into space again. And we cycle through that over and over. It is not actually that different from doing the tabletop design, which is also iterative. the difference is that the deployment schedules and methods and such are entirely different. But the process of, okay, here's an idea, get it down, try it out, cycle through it, and then tweak it, make it cooler, cycle through it again. That's pretty much the same whether you're doing Vampire the Requiem or whether you're developing EVE Online.
Okay, getting into some of the more specifics of the Vampire MMO. Are we going to be seeing sort of non-human, non-vampire supernatural creatures at play at all in the initial launch? Are we going to see werewolves going around or something?
That's something I can't talk about.
Okay. Maybe something a little broader than getting into sort of designing for a vampire MMO. Like, vampires very different, would provide a very different sort of structure than your typical MMO thing. I don't think I'm going to roll up a new vampire and walk down the street and see a little guy with an exclamation party who's like, I need 10 bear asses. Get me 10 bear asses.
Bear asses, I like
yeah.
that. Well, no, that's certainly not how Vampire works, how the World of Darkness works. I think one of the reasons White Wolf and CCP are a good fit, and forgive me for going back in time like 4 years.
It's okay.
But when I was working for White Wolf as a contractor at the time the merger came around. I was a freelance writer, and I was aware of EVE. I played a little bit. Weirdly enough, I was really into the EVE card game at one point, which was where a lot of my familiarity with the lore came from. And there was the big Guiding Hand Social Club heist happened shortly before the merger was announced. And this is a massive corporate infiltration situation, entirely concocted by players, being clever and driving their own conflicts and that kind of thing. And when I saw that, as somebody who was somewhat immersed in EVE and very immersed in the White Wolf game for several years, I'm like, you know, the only place I've ever seen something like that happen, I've never seen something like that in an MMO. I've only ever seen it happen in the in Vampire the Masquerade LARPs. And it was, it struck me as like, you know, just core Masquerade Requiem kind of political material. And so, when I heard about the merger, I'm like, oh, well, yeah, those would actually be the guys you'd be wanting to work with, wouldn't you? People who build the gigantic social engine sort of MMOs. So, as you know, companies merged, and, I came on board less than a year after the merger as a full-time employee. And the focus at CCP for pretty much everything we do, whether it's a massively multiplayer game or LARP materials or tabletop games or first-person shooter, it's human interaction. That sounds kind of abstract and high-minded, but what we're talking about is that what drives our games are people playing together and people sort of finding their own motives in play and their own stories they want to pursue, their own agendas that they want to accomplish. That's and we try and provide the worlds in which they can do that. So whether that's providing material from a vampire society or for being a space triker who's armed to the teeth, we provide sort of the world material that that you can use to create your own story. That's a high level philosophical kind of approach to it, but I can't really talk about the low-level nitty-gritty details.
All right, I will try to keep the next few questions on a broader sort of idea. For the MMO, are we going to see sort of a main antagonist or more of a network of intrigue and clan-on-clan factionalism stuff?
Well, there is no 40-foot zone.
Yeah.
again, at CCP we make social games. Not currently in the sense of you know, Facebook platform type games, but we make games that are about socialization, that are driven between that are driven by social interactions between players, and that's going to be the main engine of anything we do, from Eve Online to World of Darkness to Dust 514.
All right, something a little more content related. Are we going to be seeing PvP integrated into quest progressions? Or is that too early to talk about?
I'm afraid I can't talk about that. What I can say is that we do intend to have the different spheres of the game. Graf Koster, I believe, broke down MMOs into the coffee shop, the sandbox, and the theme park. Which are different layers of gameplay within your massively multiplayer environment. And one of the challenges for any MMO development is that you want aspects of all of those things, and you want them to feed into each other. You know, you don't want players to, with different play styles, to be entirely isolated from each other, such that they never talk, never hang out, because then you don't build the kinds of social bonds that that make a game like this run, and that keep a game like this bringing in money. I mean, we're providing a social space and creating social bonds between people with different play styles. Extremely in Eve. To pull out that example, the main thing that links people together, the main thing we use to link people together, to build those bonds, is economic interaction. And so in Eve, you see a lot of relationships between players coming out of interactions in the marketplace. And so, you know, money and resources come flowing from mining and missions. And then they cycle out into PvP out in Nullsec, and to a lesser extent into faction warfare. And every time, you know, as those resources are moving, people are the people who are trading those resources back and forth are building connections with each other and building a social web, which is really what makes the game fun.
All right, I do have a handful of questions, mostly from Paws, our forum admin, that might be a little too specific, but I'm just going to go through them fast, and if you can say something, say something. Vampires during the daylight, yes or no?
Can't say anything.
Okay. Clans that we might see at launch?
Can't really say anything yet.
All right. But if you're going back to Masquerade, can we expect to see more than just the five we saw carry over through Requiem?
With regards to the MMO being based on Masquerade, we have an extremely rich body of material at White Wolf, and we've a virtual World of Darkness has been a goal for White Wolf for a very long time, and you know, we have all this stuff that we'd like to bring together, we'd like to leverage, and so when we say the game's based on Vampire the Masquerade, it is, and you're going to see a lot of the things that you love about Vampire the Masquerade, hopefully everything that you love about Vampire the Masquerade, but keep in mind that as the MMO is based on Vampire the Masquerade, Vampire the Requiem is also based on Vampire the Masquerade. We're not throwing out any of the stuff we've developed. So you're going to see good stuff from Green Books and good stuff from Red Books, and frankly, good stuff from a lot of other public books in our future material.
All right. Another more specific one is, how often will players need to feed, and how much is that going to play into the overall sort of content?
I can't talk about that. All
right.
I can't answer any game.
All right. Not a problem. But, okay, last one before we go, because this is a video game RPG website. Do you have any particular favorites from that side of things?
The favorite video games of all time?
Yeah.
Alright. Well, Okay, at least from the Massively Multiplayer end, I should mention my Undying War for Ultima Online, which I maintain a subscription to this day. I was in UO from the beginning of beta onwards, and it's one of the greatest games of all time. I was involved with player-run theater, player towns. I had a pretty big crafting business at one point, and the community and the community world building in UO was tremendously exciting. Placing houses, forming towns, defending towns back when that was an issue in UO was just tremendously involving and exciting. In the single player end, I think one of my favorite games of all time is Sierra's Heroes Quest, branding changed to Quest for Glory fairly quickly after that, which is one of the most entertaining small interactive environments that I've ever seen. You have a relatively small map, but there's just a huge amount of content and interactive material, and the writing is hilarious. Actually, it's still funny 10 years later, so it's really one of my favorite games, and I think some of those Sierra Quest for Glory games are about as close as computer gaming's ever gotten to the deep interactive experience of a tabletop role-playing game. Beyond that, I have a lot of the favorites that everybody has. I'll sing the praises of Final Fantasy III / Final Fantasy VI till the cows come home. I think The Legend of Zelda has some of the finest mechanical gameplay that a game's ever had. There's, like I said, I have a lot of the usual favorites there.
All right. Thanks for taking the time out to chat with me, and
All right. Have a good post-afternoon now, and I'd like to remind everybody to keep an eye out for the Danse Macabre coming up soon for Vampire the Requiem. It's a massive compendium of Requiem material, including everything from new Chronicle frames to creating gargoyles to alternate systems for things like humanity, to brand new covenants like the Children of Thorns and the Brides of Dracula, and also it introduces the brand new conspiracy tier to Vampire the Requiem.